Welcome to another edition of Your Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniverti. Thanks for joining me today. This show is about money, as money does matter and matters. Money affects us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. Controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. Controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, money matters is about you. This show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Vantage Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance, of course, is no guarantee of future results, and investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risks. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. So we're back to the COVID schedule, still on the COVID schedule. This is show 311, entitled Splits and Disconnects. The show normally is aired on Thursdays, first and third Thursdays at noon, but that's when our governor of California, Gavin Newsom, gives his update. So now we air a condensed version of Money Matters, a half hour, about 29 minutes, and Money Matters is picked up by about 66 stations nationwide. So yeah, we are still in shutdown mode. Unbelievable, huh? And the market continues to plow upwards, at least the general market for sure. We're almost back at where we were before this whole thing started, market-wise. Now, the economy and, all the unemployment and just the craziness of the mask, no mask debates and presidential politics. It's just so hard to follow all this stuff. But my job is the money part of it. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is the money part. And there is kind of a disconnect with this market. I mean, here we are at almost all-time new highs on a lot of the indexes. And we have, in my opinion, going down the road of really bad economic destruction. I cannot emphasize that the amount of small businesses that are going to go under because of these shutdowns is just, I don't think anybody really has a clue on how bad it's going to be. When the 08 and 09 real estate implosion hit, I said it was going to be at least a $5 trillion money printing scheme by the feds and probably up to $10 trillion. It was somewhere in the range. So in February of this year, I penned an article and well published on the shows that I thought the all-time high in the Dow, which is where we were somewhere around mid-February, was a disconnect because the news coming out of China was that this virus had infected 35,000 people and was killing about 3% at that time. And I wanted to find out what previous viruses had done to economic statistics. So I went back and looked at the 03 SARS event. That only infected about 10,000, had about a 10% kill rate. So killed a lot more people, but it only infected about 10,000 people. And the Chinese GDP at that time had dropped 1%. Now, China was about the fifth largest economy in the world. And I'd already known in February of this year that China GDP was going to drop because of the tariffs, and we anticipated that that was going to upset the market. Well, now I was looking at pictures of vacated cities, Wuhan specifically, and I thought, wow, this thing's already at 35,000 people. I'm looking at an empty city in China and a virus that is spreading. So I published that I didn't think the market was taking the possibility of the full effect of this virus into consideration, and that the Dow was at an all-time high or close to it, or had just recently hit it. And I said that I think there's a possibility, a great possibility, that this thing is going to get quite severe. And at that time, about 2 weeks later, we publicized, with the permission of regulators, that we had gone into a pretty much an all-sell mode on the portfolios. And so that was our position at that time. And we implemented, pretty widespread defensive mode at that time and published that. And, of course, I think that was the 2nd or 3rd of March, and that's actually when the thing kind of started. And so now I'm coming forward and saying that there's going to be a plethora of small businesses that are going to go under. And it's going to have a real, real severe effect on the economy, more than what people anticipate. It is estimated, I estimated early, about 25% of the businesses, small businesses in the United States would go under. And with that, you have all the ancillary support of these businesses and you're going to lose all that income. Now, we didn't see an immediate effect because of all the stimulus and the bailout checks and the stimulus checks and the unemployment bonuses. But I think down the road, we are going to see it. Meanwhile, this market plows upwards. So how do we address that? There's an old adage in Wall Street, and it goes, buy the rumor, sell the news. It refers to investors' tendency to buy a company's stock on a rumor of good things to come and sell the stock when the actual news hits the wire. Buy the rumor, sell the news. Such may be the case when it comes to a possible COVID vaccine announcement. The market could be running in anticipative recovery in the hopes of investors that we will return to normal. I think it's going to be a long time, even if we found a vaccine tomorrow. It's going to be a long time before we return to normal, for sure, on as far as earnings are concerned. Will the market sell the news when the actual announcement comes forth in the news? Although the common belief is that a vaccine will light the afterburners of all stock prices, my dad used to say when everybody's thinking the same thing, nobody is thinking. I think it's possible that the markets may go through some major upheavals and rotations when the announcement about a virus comes in. And, in my opinion, when a vaccine is announced, there may be a severe and upsetting rotation out of stocks that were previously bought and run up and into other stocks that may be still languishing. So what do I mean by that? When the COVID shutdowns began, the market fell historically hard. It went from an all-time high into bear market territory and then into down 20% as an official bear market, a down 10 is a correction. Indeed, the 38% crash of the Dow occurred in record time and obliterated an all-time high, falling into bear market territory, down 20% from an all-time high in about 3 weeks. Now, no sooner than the low had been reached, a handful of stocks, but only a handful, turned and headed higher in blistering speed. Although most stocks joined hands in the downward direction when the crash took place in the first 3 weeks of March, only a handful of stocks reversed course when the recovery started, at least back then. Keen investors soon realized that although a huge number of companies would be devastated by the shutdowns, some companies would not only remain unscathed, but actually benefit from the new stay-at-home economy. If you bought an index fund during the first 3 or 4 weeks of when this thing started to turn back up, in that index fund there was probably a lot of companies that were going to go under, or some. And so you basically had to pick the right stock. So this was, instead of an index buying market, this turn, the third or fourth week of March when it started, was more like a stock picker's market. You had to pick the right stocks. And it kind of still is. There's still a lot of companies that are languishing. I don't have to go into the list, but they would include rental cars and airlines and hotels and restaurant securities. But some of these, selective recovery stocks, these are the internet conduits, the video stocks, the streaming stocks. So you had to pick the right ones and stay away from the wrong ones. So buying an index fund or a mutual fund just during the recovery may not have worked as well as being a stock picker's market, so which takes actually a little bit more skill, obviously. The stay-at-home stocks, as we know, saw their sales explode as buying habits of the American consumer and indeed worldwide was drastically altered by the COVID event. Many people were stuck in their homes. The internet traffic increased dramatically, right? What else were you going to do? And the companies that serviced the internet and sold their products through the internet saw their stocks quickly rise. In contrast, some of the companies that depended on retail outlets, brick and mortar stuff is what we call them, travel, transportation, entertainment, and other brick and mortar business models, we may have seen some of those languish. Indeed, some of these brick and mortar stocks barely budged. It's safe to say the market's recovery has been confined, at least for the first couple of months, to a handful of stocks, with many other stocks still today being stuck in the mud. That said, some of the stocks that have benefited from the recovery from the stay at home have reached crazy, crazy heights and have very expensive multiples. And I don't need to mention who those securities are. You probably already know all the names. In the opinion of some, and in my opinion, there may be a surprise and vicious backlash on some of these companies whose stocks have exploded during the shutdown with a vaccine announcement. When the vaccine is announced, or you know, the general belief will be, and Wall Street is starting to think that is getting closer than what most people think, that announcement could slam and reverse the mindset in shopping lists of investors. In other words, there may be a whole new list of stocks that are going to explode, and some of the stocks that have exploded may be slammed in reverse. Now, that's an opinion. Nobody can predict markets at any time, but I'm thinking that's what's kind of going to happen here. Investors may turn their portfolio gun sights away from the familiar high flyers and instead look for better bargains in the beaten down sectors of stocks that are still stuck in the mud, that are still languishing. The thought being that these hammered companies whose share prices are still stuck in the dirt may see their stock prices race higher in anticipation of an opening economy and the release of this massive pent-up demand from stir-crazy customers. People want to get out and eat. They want to go shopping. They want to go to the ball game. And people are going stir-crazy. And so when they're unleashed, we may see a lot of pent-up demand hit the markets. And it may not be in the video stocks and streaming stocks. We may see those types of usage of those conduits drop off while people go take an airplane and go fly or go to a theme park or amusement park. It is said for a stock being beaten up from bad news, it is said a stock being beaten up from bad news to turn up. The news doesn't necessarily have to be good. The news just has to stop being bad. A vaccine announcement would certainly qualify as news that is no longer bad, and that would actually be qualified as good news. It may be wise for you investors out there that have portfolios in the market to step back from your love of these certain stocks that have blasted off and instead consider what profits may have been made and look to preserve those profits, right? Take some money off the table. And if you bought one of these internet stocks or whatever that has exploded in price, maybe takes a little bit that off, a little bit of that money off. With a vaccine, with an announcement, there's no telling what will occur. And I think what will occur is going to surprise a lot of people. The market never does what you expect it to do, especially when a lot of people expect the market to do something. That's when it usually fools you the most. With a vaccine, there's no telling what will happen, what sectors will rise, and what sectors will go in the opposite direction. I, again, am of the opinion there's going to be a lot of money changing hands during a massive rotation that may take place during the start, the second the announcement of a vaccine is made. It might be wise to at least consider that some of the stocks in the news today may also be in the news tomorrow for a whole different reason. And many other surprise stock candidates may make up a new top 40 shopping list for investors. We'll be right back with Your Money Matters. My name's Mark Cooper. Called Splits, Disconnects, and Rookie Mistakes. Splits, Disconnects, and Rookie Mistakes. The recent stock split announcement from Tesla and Apple, it got me thinking as to whether the average investor truly understands how stocks work. Although stock splits are common, my guess is stock splits are not completely understood by the average investor and even some advisors. It is thought a stock split is thought to be a good thing. However, it's one of life's better examples as to the difference between perception and reality. There are two types of stock splits. There's the common split and a reverse split. Now, today, we're just going to cover the common split. We'll have to cover the reverse split in another newscast or show. So a common split is the one that most investors are familiar with. What happens on a common split is you have a certain amount of shares and you get more shares for free, kind of. For example, you have ABC Company and you have 100 shares and they announce a 2-for-1 stock split. So you are given an extra share for every share you own. That's why it's called a 2-for-1. So they don't give you 2 shares and let you keep the 3rd share. 2-for-1 means you will end up with 2 if you have 1. So they give you 1. So 2-for-1 stock split. You will end up 2 shares for 1. 3-for-1, if you had 1 share, you'd end up with 3. 4-for-1, you'd end up with 4 if you had started out with 1. Sounds great, right? Okay. What investors don't realize is that whatever the ratio is for the split, the stock price is reduced by that same multiple negatively. So for instance, if the share price of a stock is 10 bucks and you own 100 shares, 10 bucks times 100 shares is 1,000 bucks. You have $1,000 worth of stock. 10 shares, 100 bucks. 100 shares, 10 bucks. 100 shares, 10 bucks. Same thing. Now, company comes along and announces a 2-for-1 stock split. You will end up with 200 shares. But the stock price doesn't stay at 10. The day of the split, when you get 2 shares, they take your 1 and they give you 2, the stock drops in half. It drops to 5 bucks. So now you have 200 shares, but they're each worth 5 bucks. So you have the same $1,000 worth of stock. See what happened? Simply put, if they double the amount of stock in your hand, they cut the price of it in half. If they do a 3-for-1 split and you get 3 more shares, the new price of the stock will be 1/3 of what it was. So the net effect to you in a split is nothing. Nothing. Whatever they split the shares of, they divide the stock by that number. So if they give you 4 shares, you had 1, now you get 4. So if it was 10 bucks, it's going to go down to 250, and you'll have 4 shares worth 250, so you'll still have $1,000 worth of stock shares. The best analogy, think of it of taking a pencil and breaking it in two. You now have 2 pencils, but no more pencil than you actually started with, right? Each pencil is smaller. That's how stock splits work. The question then becomes, if an investor ends up with more shares after a split, but each share is worth that much less, how do you benefit, right? Well, you don't. It's all perception. So people think stock splits are good, but you don't end up with any more money necessarily because of the actual split. However, there is a reason a stock split is thought to be a positive thing for existing shareholders. Right? Oh, good, my stock's going to split. After a split, the stock price is lower, right? By the ratio of whatever they split the shares to. And it's the basic truth of economic theory. When you lower a price for anything, as long as there's not a monopoly, when you lower the price of anything, you will sell more. Lower the price of something and you will sell more. That also holds true of stock. Indeed, if a stock price is lowered through a split, and through a common split, it is lower. That can mean more people may buy the stock. And the more buyers there are for a stock, the higher the price may go. For a real-world example, let's go back to the prices of Tesla and Apple, which both announced splits recently. Okay? Tesla did a 5-for-1 split. When they announced the split, the share price was around $1,400. That means for every share of Tesla you own, they did a 5-for-1 split. For every share of Tesla you own, you will then have 5. They give you 4 more in a 5-for-1 split, but you end up with 5. But what happens now is that the stock price of Tesla, which was $1,400 at the time of the split, if it wasn't $1,400 when it splits, then the new share price would be around $300. Now, the price of Tesla moves every second, so we don't know what it'll be when it actually splits. But whatever the day of the price of Tesla is on the split day, it'll automatically be reduced by, you know, be 1/5 of what it was. Apple did a 4-for-1 split, okay? So its price will drop to 25% of what it was the day of the split. So although the actual split garners a shareholder no real advantage in the math of the split, the reality of the lower stock price means more people may buy the stock. The lower the price, the more people will buy it. Indeed, it's a generally accepted belief that investors like lower priced stocks. So if they look at a Tesla at $1,400 or an Amazon at $3,200, they'll say, well, I don't want to just buy one share. Although you can buy fractional shares, people's perception is I want to buy a lot of shares. So by reducing the price of the stock, they generally think that more people will buy it. And if more people buy it, it'll go up. And indeed, if you're going to go by basic economics, you lower the price of something, you'll sell more. Stock splits look to take advantage of that economic propensity. It looks to take advantage of the fact that investors may buy a stock that's lower in price. In other words, if I told you you could buy a stock that's $50,000 a share, and you could buy a fractional share, maybe 1/50,000, you wouldn't buy it. But if I told you the same stock was like a dollar, you might want to buy 1,000 shares. It's no sense to the math, mathematically, but it's what happens. So just wanted to make clear that on stock splits, it is perception rather than reality. Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll be right back and we'll talk about rookie investment mistakes. Get back. I'm all right, Jack. Keep your hands off of my stack. Money, it's a hit. Don't get me back. And welcome back to Your Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. You're listening to show 311 on your community radio station. And today's show, we were talking about stock splits, the market disconnects, and finally, we're going to cover rookie investing mistakes. Rookie investing mistakes. Because I write in the newspaper, my picture's around a lot, and I get approached by many investors asking me questions about stock, right? Like if somebody knows you're a doctor, they're going to ask you about, what's this bump? Right? So I get approached a lot. People ask me about a stock or an investment. Usually the question tells me about the experience of the investor on the question. Okay, I hear the question, I already know what kind of investor this guy is. The theme of most questions, stopped in the street, in the restaurant, in the gym, represents one of a long line of many mistakes beginning investors make whether they're starting out or having been investing for at least a little bit of time. You've been investing for 20 years, you usually don't make these mistakes. I've found few people new to investing make much money. Some make some money, but they usually lose it subsequently. And the mistakes are many. First off, some investors don't want to manage their money. They turn it over to an advisor, and there can be a lot of mistakes made there too. And speaking with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, we had the conversation on when one might need an advisor and when one might not want to have an advisor. In my opinion, those that believe the market goes up over the long term could probably avoid the fees of an advisory service and instead just invest in some market index funds. I'm not saying that that's what to do, but I'm saying if you believe you should just buy funds and hold, you could just buy a bunch of index funds and maybe skip the advisor. You could consider that. I'm not saying that would do you any good, but you could consider it. There are some that want more active management, or in my opinion, advisors should provide downside protection. They should get you out at a certain time, but that disagrees with a lot of what advisors think, at least the ones I run into. A lot of them don't have an exit strategy that I know of, but I believe you should have one. But if you want an exit strategy or active money management, perhaps a paid advisor might be better for you. Most of all, however, don't forget Warren Buffett, the famous investor's two investing rules. Rule one, don't lose money. Rule two, don't forget rule one. This is why, in my opinion, a stop loss or an exit strategy is very, very important. Novice investors have these mistakes. They have a tendency to chase stocks. If it's the latest and hottest stock, they're usually in or planning to get in. There's a reason the terms smart money and dumb money refer to professional traders and mom-and-pop investors, respectively. Usually the smart money rides the wave up, the dumb money gets in way too late. Beginners also want to want to buy low-priced stocks in order to buy more shares. Then it goes along with the stock splits that we just talked about. There may be a bit of logic here, but it's the percentage move that counts. Higher-priced stocks tend to move in large dollar figures, while low-priced stocks tend to move in pennies. But the percentages are the same, so it makes no difference what price the stock is, which depends on how much money you're going to make, as a general rule. Novice investors usually stay too long in a position. They rarely take profit in chunks. In other words, they're either all in or all out. Selling half a position to use what we call the house's money if you double. If you have a double, you could sell half, and now you got your original investment back. Instead, like I said, they're usually all in or all out. They can also suffer huge losses, unwilling to initiate damage control on a plummeting position. In other words, you stop the bleeding. They may ride the train all the way down to the bottom or even buy more stock in hope of averaging in. Bad medicine for sure, averaging in. You buy more stock as it plummets, so that means your price per share is lower. It averages down lower. I don't believe in that. Beginners usually won't touch the boring dividend payers large cap stocks. They're instead after fast profits and looking for doubles and triples, right? They don't go out and buy, you know, United States Power Company. Instead, they go buy other flying companies, you know, the high flyers and such. They may play in the dangerous yard of options. Options, if they know how they work, even more hazardous. They usually only know the story of the stock. They don't know of any of its financials or fundamentals. They also buy usually on a tip from a friend, coworker, family member. They will fall in love with the stock, trade the same stock over and over. And the last one is they think they can time the market by their gut. Beginners, they can panic when their stock that they buy immediately goes down. They expect to buy a stock and have it immediately go up, and they feel terrible as soon as they buy it if it goes down. They don't accept the fact that you have to wait and be patient. In conclusion, I can usually tell an investor's experience by the questions they ask and the stories they tell me. That's the easy part. The hard part is to explain all the do's and don'ts of investing in brief conversations, hence why I have the show. That would take a whole series of classes, and I've done those too. Okay, we're out of time for Money Matters. I want to thank you for joining me today. This has been Show 311, Market Disconnects, Rookie Mistakes, and more. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. And remember, today's show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified investment professional before making any investment decisions. Indices mentioned, stocks mentioned, etc., may not be able to be invested in directly, and they do bear a certain amount of risk. I'm an investment advisor representative through Vantage Financial Group, a registered investment advisor, and I hold California insurance license OL34249. Have a good day, and go make some money. Money. Get back.